So how should we grade the election's media coverage? If you sat in front of the television on Tuesday night, chances are it felt like a roller coaster. Out of the gate, Democrats were leading. Soon after, Republicans made a comeback. Up and down and up and down, there was a blue wave stalled by a red wall and roundtables of pundits offering their predictions. But prior to Tuesday, there was also months' worth of diligent and in-depth reporting across outlets that attempted to get the story right and not overlook voting blocks that were undercovered or simply misunderstood in the past. But did we, the media, get it right? Alex Perrine is a writer for HuffPost and the former editor-in-chief of Gawker. Alex, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
All right, so the big question, we're going to be a little self-critical here. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the coverage leading up to Tuesday. Where did you think the picture was well reported?
I thought what was done well was I was actually sort of surprised to see media outlets, professional, like mainstream nonpartisan media outlets, actually willing to call out what I saw as extremely racist campaigning on the part of the Republican Party. Because you don't always see that because there's sort of a taboo against using the R word in the professional media. So it was actually heartening to see that, for example, the Notorious Caravan ad was actually called, as it was, basically racist propaganda. So I was heartened to see that. And I think there was very good coverage of obstacles set up to voting in by Brian Kemp and in other places across the country. So I think, you know, if depending on what media sources you were following and what you were reading, I think you would get a pretty good picture of what the state of the campaign was leading up to Tuesday.
Where did you think were some of the gaps?
Well, like I said, it was good to see individual stories call things like the caravan ad racist, but I thought it was harder to see people putting together a coherent narrative of the entire race. From what I saw was the entire message of the Republican Party. There was no policy involved, really. Their campaign was essentially stoking racial paranoia. And I think reporters and editors are much more comfortable calling individual pieces of a campaign racist than they are saying, well, boy, the entire strategy top to bottom is just stoking white fear. So you saw it in individual stories, but again, people didn't always put everything in context.
Also, we can't have a conversation about—well, we were only going to have a conversation about the media coverage up until the midterms, and then there was a pretty intense press conference that happened yesterday following the midterms. The president began the press conference in what I thought was quite a muted tone. He seemed tired and just sort of, you know, not really his usual bombastic self. And then the Q&A— came. And then we saw a sparring between the president and multiple reporters. There was one reporter who asked him specifically about nationalism, and he called her a racist question. So there we go. We get to bring in the R word. But then we saw this back and forth between one of the president's, I would say, favorite targets, if you will, and that was Jim Acosta. Let's play a short clip from that.
I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN. All right. And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough.
Mr. President,
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic. I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
And just to update our listeners here, since that press conference, the White House has revoked Jim Acosta's security access badge to getting into the White House. When the American public sees something like that, what kind of impact does that have on their perception of the White House press corps, of the media in general?
Yeah, I don't mean to demean the work that people like Jim Acosta do, but President Trump is— and the White House are basically, they're doing professional wrestling. And it was, from their perspective, they're just creating a theatrical moment. And what people are going to come away with wildly divergent takes of what happened there. And I think that's sort of their intention. The intention is to heighten polarization. And so you're... average liberal American is going to be outraged on behalf of the media. And then your average Trump supporter is just going to be saying, all right, like, let's do it. Like, get them. And it's
them been, being the press.
Yeah, get the press. Yeah. And it's been part of their entire media strategy since the very beginning is to sort of stoke these fights. And it's an easy trap to fall into because obviously having access to the White House and having a press that is able to do its job is a hugely important First Amendment issue. But at the same time, everyone keeps being dragged into these fights that are essentially just about theatrics that are done purely for the benefit of the White House.
I'm wondering, too, how much should we be covering these things, right? There's a sense that we can't – this presidency has really brought a different tone, a different tenor to be generous to handling these. And so how much do you think the media should be covering the media?
It's a tough question. And I think the media errs on the side of covering itself too much a lot. And I say this as a person who basically writes about it professionally for a living, so I'm kind of being hypocritical here. But there are ways in which it's the only way the media can get at the story of how unusual and extreme this White House is by telling stories of how weird its relationship with the press is, in a sense, because that's what they're more comfortable saying, well, this is an unprecedented treatment of us by the White House. So this White House is therefore like breaking all these norms because they're just more comfortable going there than they are saying something like that about policy issues or about other things like that. So I totally understand the incentives that lead to covering these press conferences the way they're covered. And they are news, but they're certainly not the most consequential news that's going on in the country. So if I was in charge of CNN, I don't really know exactly how I would be treating things like these press conferences, which are staged to cause incidents but are also themselves news.
You mentioned CNN. I full disclosure, I worked at CNN for a few years before coming here. The punditry issue, and this is not limited to CNN. We see this on MSNBC. We see this on most of the cable news stations. These are folks that are really essentially trying to fill 24 hours worth of airtime, which is quite a while to talk about things. How much is the punditry at large, if you will, hurting the conversation? Because I think even CNN said they might try to walk back some pundits who are really paid political contributors.
Yeah, that's sort of galling, I think. If you're a viewer, you don't always know what the interests are of the person talking on your television. 24-hour cable news is an attempt to fill that much time with people talking in debate. And I think it's not particularly good for informing the public to turn news into basically a sports call-in show, which it feels like much of the time. But that's debate is what leads to ratings. And they bring in people who are basically professional Trump supporters who then say outrageous things because that's part of being a professional Trump supporter is to cause outrage and say divisive and extreme things. And then they pat themselves in the back, the anchors pat themselves in the back for, saying that's out of line. But, you are hosting this circus, like you organized the circus. And then you get very outraged when like the clowns show up and do their routine. There are certainly better models for debate based political coverage. And I think like those models exist certainly on like public radio and lots of other places. But I don't know if those models are as good for the sort of ratings they want to get in this era.
Talk about another one last media issue here. The emphasis on in any election year, there's always an emphasis on the sleeping giant of Latino voters, for example, right? This year in particular, we saw, if anything, Latinos were a critical part of the news cycle, everything from Hurricane Maria, Puerto Rican voters, to what was happening at the southern border, to the detention camps that had been set up. And so what was stunning to me, and I think a lot of other folks, was the lack or the void of Latino punditry, if you will, or folks who were able to really speak to these issues. And let me be clear, Latino journalists do not have to cover immigration, right?
Course,
like that's often the time that they're brought in. But did you notice a lack of representation of the issues when it came to people of color, specifically this sort of these monolithic groups that get covered and then don't get asked to sit at the table for the analysis of what's happening?
Yeah, and that's you can sort of already picture in your head a cable news panel discussing the refugee crisis. That's like five white guys. Like you can picture that in your head very clearly, and because it's typical. And if anything, in the Trump era, once he got elected, these channels sort of were like, oh, we got to get a couple more white guys in here because that was the story we missed last time around was all these angry white conservatives. So we better get some more of them in here. It's obviously an endemic problem in big media. I would say there's at least a lot of alternative outlets to go to if you want more diverse coverage. And, you know, to speak of the media and refer only to cable news is to sort of miss that. I don't really think a ton of young people of color in this country are actually watching a lot of cable news at all. I think they're getting their news elsewhere. And I think that will eventually be a crisis for these outlets that we're talking about. And then they're going to wish that they had actually done something more to address the diversity of their own channels beforehand.
Alex Perrine is the former editor at Gawker and currently writing for HuffPost. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.